somebody walked up behind me and was like, bro, so how are you going to say we can't get off the line of scrimmage? You was a wide receiver. I turn around, it's James Jones. You going to sit there on TV and bash us? I'm like, damn, how do I handle this? The first time that a player has really come calling at me like this.
Yeah.
Calling me out.
Yeah.
And as I started to formulate my sentence, I was like, look, man, he's like, I'm just playing, bro.
What's up, everybody? We back. Another week, R2C2.
Man, this week, it's like take your podcast co-host to work day.
Right.
Because I am at your place of employment for this week. See, you've been a regular on Good Morning Football on NFL Network.
Shit's been kicking my ass, guys. I can't even lie. Like, I got so much respect for these guys now.
Well,
like,
we get to chat with who you've been doing the show with, Nate Burleson and Peter Schrager, who do a wonderful job on their many different football media ventures. But have had to adapt to being constantly around the greatest laugh in sports.
The best. Oh,
right? Right.
See, he has a great laugh, doesn't he?
So infectious.
It is. It's unbelievable.
Appreciate that, guys.
It's like Santa Claus.
It is. Thank you guys for being on. What's it been like this week with this guy? How's it been?
It's been amazing, bro. Listen, I feel like for so long, Ahmad Rashad was the only dude that successfully crossed over from one sport to another, and we didn't blink. We just kind of accepted it. Like, Ahmad Rashad is the man. He's talking about NBA, but he was a great receiver. But for a long time, we get caught up in putting labels on people, and it's like, all right, if you played a certain sport, you're talking about that sport for the rest of your life. Now, 2019, 2020, if you can wake up, articulate your words, and you're a fan of something, just be a fan of something and allow other people to enjoy your words. And CeCe has done that beautifully. Like, this week, you couldn't even, if you didn't know he was one of the greatest pitchers to ever play the game, you would have no idea, especially by his size. You'd be like, oh, dude, he had to play football. And like today, we had Brian Westbrook on the show, and CeCe's asking like the third question. And the most difficult thing about having a guest that becomes a sit-in guest on our show and has to ask questions as a host is that awkward moment where they have to try to remember
the
what they're going to say.
Not the interviewee.
Yeah, because they don't know if they want to read it off the card, read it off the prompter, or try to go off memory. And it comes to CeCe, and he picks it up seamlessly, right? There's no, like, dead space, and he goes, all right, Brian, so listen. Hey, right out the gate, I'm like, all right, see?
Brian was even looking at me like, come on, dog.
And then he follows it up by, I have a two-part question. I was like, oh, okay.
He's fucking Maury Safer for 60 minutes.
Brian Gumble over here.
Yeah. Now, you know what's cool, though, is that I can really be a fan, and these guys, like, I'm short on a lot of stuff. Obviously, I don't know, like,
yeah.
a lot of information, so they just, like, pick it up. So it's like, it just lets me be a fan, and like, because I really watch this show, obviously, and it just lets me come in there and just have fun and really just feed off of them.
Now,
it's fun.
My whole deal is I'm like the insider or the reporter, and my phone is always lighting up, and Nate always laughs because we'll be talking about an NFL coach, and he'll be texting us while the segment's going on because he's watching. This whole week, which is kind of a downtime for football and yet a huge time for baseball considering what's going on with the Astros and all that, my phone has been lighting up with NFL executives, general managers, head coaches, and 99% of the commentary during the show is, damn, CeCe Sabathia is really good at this. And not in a, hey, he seems comfortable, like his insight is good and his experience it transcends sports. So, I mean, we've been just so honored and blessed to have CeCe here because the right attitude, first guy here every morning, and then lighting it up with that insight and smiles, but also just being a great team player. So, CeCe, thank you on behalf of all of us here.
No problem.
That's kind of cool that all the coaches and GMs watching you this week, right?
Yes, it's weird, but it's fun though.
Like, who would be the coach who you're like, oh man, I'm glad. He's watching. Do you have any like
Andy Reid?
Oh, Andy Reid, your guy.
I don't know why. Yeah, I'm a big Andy Reid fan.
I like that.
Yeah,
man.
You know I know Tom Coughlin too. So that
he's cool. Yeah, Tom Coughlin's great. Tom Coughlin. One of the oddest experiences I ever had in regard to Tom Coughlin. Like I just never took him as a guy who listened to like talk radio.
Okay.
You know, like he just always feels like a no BS kind of guy, right? Like he's not getting
watching
into
war documentaries.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
He's reading books.
Yeah, exactly.
Documentaries or books.
He's listening to patent audio tapes on his way to the stadium, right? Like, but Robin Lumberg and I used to host a show at 5 a.m. and we were moving to 10 a.m. and as part of it, we were trying to get some big guests. So, like, Tom Coughlin, the Giants, gave us for our 10 a.m. and he comes on and he's like, I'm actually upset you guys are moving. I listen to you at 5 a.m. every morning on my drive to the stadium. Like, Ryan, I like your taste of music better than Robin's. I'm like, what the heck? Tom Coughlin? Like, blew your mind.
So Tom Coughlin likes Eminem cats?
Yeah, exactly.
No chance.
He did. Yeah, apparently, he did.
Basically, you start thinking about all the things you've been saying over the
right,
years.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Wait, when Plaxico did that, what was my commentary? Yeah.
You know what? That's interesting, actually, because one of the things, like, just because we all have different sort of paths to media, right? And different roles now in media. You know, Nate, you're a great wide receiver. Peter, you've been a reporter for a really long time. Now you're on a daily show, right? CeCe, you've been you're going to the Hall of Fame as a pitcher. Now you're into media, right? Like now this is, and me, this is, you know, what I always wanted to do. And I used those shows and now I do, you know, mostly play by play. But like, do you have, Nate, I'll start with you. Do you have like kind of a policy on like how you approach when you are going to be critical of a guy and maybe even, you know, somebody who you have a relationship with? Because, you know, there are times where you're going to have to, when I say be critical, I don't mean bash.
Yeah.
But, you know, be honestly critical about it. Like, do you have kind of a policy in mind for how you approach that?
I left the game in 2014 and I was just like every other player when I first started. I was complimenting everybody. And as soon as there was a moment for me to kind of slide in and be critical, I would lay out because I thought to myself, I don't want a coach or a player to get mad at me. I'm part of this fraternity. It's a brotherhood. And I don't want them to discard me and look at me as the other, not even as the media, but just the other guy that is still trying to bash these guys. But then one of my mentors said, you got to say something, dude. This was like 6 months into my career on the West Coast when I was working in Culver City. So you got to say something. You're not saying anything. Everything you say starts with if I think and I hope
maybe arguably
you know, all the words that people hate. And then when it comes to just having a moment of not bashing but being critical, you always lay out and you do the opposite. He said that gets old really quickly. So I made the change in how I approached it, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just start being honest. I called it being honest instead of being a guy that's tearing down individuals. And I remember one specific situation that happened where Aaron Rodgers, the offense wasn't moving, and James Jones was on that offense, and they were a little older at the wide receiver position. I believe Jordy Nelson was banged up. And I said, listen, teams are coming in and they're harassing the wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. They're being very physical. So when Aaron Rodgers drops back, that first glance, guys are draped, so he can't get the ball out to them. The wide receivers have to get off the ball. If they don't get off the ball, then this offense isn't going to get where they need to go. They'll be on the outside looking in the playoffs. And I said that a few times over, and then other people started picking it up, and then other football heads started noticing what I noticed. And I was calling a game, and it was the Green Bay Packers in Detroit, and I was at the hotel checking in, and somebody walked up behind me and was like, bro, so how are you going to say we can't get off the line of scrimmage? You was a wide receiver. I turn around, it's James Jones. And he's like, man, all these years of you knowing how hard it is to get off the line of scrimmage, especially at my age, you're going to sit there on TV and bash us? And literally just a blank face. I'm like, damn, how do I handle this? The first time that a player has really come
calling
at me like
out.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. Calling me out.
Yeah.
And as I started to formulate my sentence, I was like, look, man, he's like, I'm just playing, bro. And he was like, you're being real. He's like, we can't get off the line of scrimmage. He said, we got to work on our release moves. And at my age, this is not one of the things that I do best. And these young guys, they don't have enough experience. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, cool. We had a laugh, a hug, dapped him up. I said, but seriously, how am I handling being on TV? He said, you're good, man. He said, you have the right amount of critical. And that's my advice I can give to everybody. Just have the right amount of critical.
There's one that happened in this past offseason before Antonio Brown had all these issues with the law and everything like this. He called out Juju Smith-Schuster on Twitter, and Nate came out with one of the most, I don't know, just candid takes. Nate was like, that's lame. And it was like the symbol, like, that's lame. Like, why are you calling out Juju? And I looked at Nate and I'm like, that's pretty strong. And then people ran with it and it was like, Nate Burleson calls Antonio Brown lame. But Nate's point was, I don't like how you're talking about the young fella. I don't like talking about a teammate. And I think anyone to a man would say to Nate, okay, well, that's honest and that's real. And yeah, maybe you're taking on Antonio Brown and calling him lame, but you stood behind it.
Yeah, and that was a real, I remember watching that segment and it was so real. As a fan, it's like, Juju reached out to him on DM when he was at USC, wanted to be a part of it. Like, it was really fucking lame for him to do that.
It was.
So it wasn't a problem, him saying that. Cause I remember watching that morning. I was like, yeah, Nate's right.
Yeah.
To the point,
it's like, I'm not calling him lame.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that move was
lame. That move was lame.
And what you did was lame. And like, as a player, I can get on TV and I can call out a specific play and be like, yo, you messed up. Like, that was bad, or something you did in the offseason. I remember Geno Smith. you know, he had a whole bunch of stuff going on while he was in New York. You know, he got punched in the jaw in the locker room. He's the butt of all jokes. And everybody attacked him. And I remember seeing
We were out
him.
Together that night.
We were out together tonight, lit.
Shout out to Tao.
Shout out to Tao.
Summer of 2017.
That night started early and ended late. And Gino came out with us, and I'm literally just like, being honest, I'm fucked up. Like, I'm drunk.
Yeah.
But I was like, I sobered up really quickly because I saw him, and I got excited when I see players, like seeing a brother.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, Gino, I got to talk to you for a second, man. I'm like, come here. And, you know, I'm doing that, like, drunk conversation in the club where you're kind of yelling, but you're hoping he's reading your lips. You know what I'm saying? Because it's too loud.
And you're so close.
Almost kissing.
Exactly.
I'm like, hey, yo, Gino, like, be honest with me. When all that went down, that locker room drama, how did I handle it? I don't care about how everybody else talked about it. How did I handle it? He said, Nate, he said, you handled it the right way because you had a joke, but you didn't make me the joke.
Mm.
And he said, as far as on the field, when I threw picks, you were hard on me.
Yeah.
He said, but when I lit it up, you gave me love. Mm. And I was like, that's the biggest compliment I can get.
And you know what's crazy? Players listen.
They act like they don't.
Everybody says, oh, I don't watch that shit. Yeah, the fuck you do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I've been a player, and I know. Like, you listen to what people say about you, or whether good or bad.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Because
you know how you feel about, like, you know, sometimes when I'm going bad, I don't watch that shit because I know how bad it is.
Yeah.
But when I'm going good, you know what I'm saying? You're tasting yourself, and then you have a bad little spill. It's hard not to.
Well, we had a thing today.
You know what I'm saying?
Jameis Winston gets LASIK eye surgery.
Yeah.
And the jokes on Twitter are everywhere. So now we got to talk about it on the show. And how do you do it respectfully, but how do you also entertain the audience who's waiting for a punchline from you? And I thought both of you guys handled it very respectfully. And I had to kind of sit up there and be like, well, I know there's a lot of jokes online, but in all seriousness, like, but that's part of the job because, you know, Jameis might be watching and his feelings might genuinely be hurt by people mocking him and mocking his career and saying, oh, he needs LASIK eye surgery and now he's got 30-30 vision and da-da-da-da-da. But I thought you guys handled it well, but that's the balancing act.
Yeah. I think for me, when I think about this, like, the number one key is that it doesn't move too fast for you, right? Because my approach is everything I say, I want to be something I truly believe, right? And when it moves fast for you and you're just trying to, like, speak, and when you're starting out, you know, depending on where you're at in your career and your personality and all that, it can move fast. Yeah. And like, you, that's when you end up saying something you don't actually believe, or embellishing or piling on, or being more critical than you want to. I feel like once it slows down, it's a little bit easier for you to be authentic and only actually express things you believe. And then you can be honest, but also a little more calculated in how you are critical. Mike Breen, when I was in college, Mike Breen, obviously, voice of the NBA, voice of the Knicks.
Yeah.
I went to Florida.
Bang!
Yeah, you got it, baby. You got it. He's amazing. By the way, as amazing of a play-by-play guy is, he's also like
great dude.
Amazing
Never
dude.
Never met him, yeah.
That's awesome.
He's really funny, too. Like, he used to be on Imus. As
he was
like, he was unbelievably hilarious, and then he realized he probably needed to disassociate to continue his NBA play-by-play growth, right, which was a smart move. But he's the greatest dude, and he just used to say, I have a rule. I will only say something on the air that I would say to the player's face.
Great. Mm.
And that is the rule I try to say. Now, if I am just always waxing poetic, I lose my credibility. So now you don't want that as the athlete because now my kind words about you don't mean anything.
Yeah,
you know?
But see, like me, I'll say anything to somebody's face. I don't give a fuck.
Well, good. That's your policy then.
You fucking see some athlete. Yeah.
Exactly.
As far as baseball goes, like, as football, I'm a fan. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it is what it is. But like,
I think
everybody
that's
that knows
okay.
me and all my friends that know me, they like, yeah, it is what it is.
Right.
Like, you can either handle it or you can't.
Man,
you
know? I know, because when I follow your personal Instagram, I'm thinking, he's saying this, but does he have anybody who's following him who might not like this right now,
fuck,
man? And I'm like, CeCe doesn't care, you know?
God,
but
care.
That's, you know, that's your reality, right? Like, you will actually say that to the person's face, you know? And I think it's like, it's just like, you know, it depends if you're local or you're national, right? Like, when I do a Yankee or a Net game, I'm not going to be as critical of Yankees and Nets as I would if I'm doing a national game right in that moment. But I'm still going to be honest. So if CeCe's struggling, I may say, today's been a struggle for CeCe.
Yeah, today
he's
has.
Laboring.
Temporary.
Exactly. Yeah, right. He's been laboring through five innings, right?
Right?
But if I'm on a national broadcast, maybe I feel a little more comfortable saying, today has really been a struggle, you know, for CeCe or whatever. But no matter what, I'm not going to say, whether it's national or local, CeCe's been a disaster today.
Right.
This is no.
He's
like,
a bum.
He's a bum. Yeah. No, that's not like that's you trying to make you the story, right?
So, for me, I learned it from an NFL head coach, and Nate remembers this story well. But it was probably like 2017, Cam Newton refused to wear a tie to a game in Seattle, and Ron Rivera benched him for the first series of the game. And on the very first pass, Derek Anderson, his backup, throws a pick six, and that was all she wrote.
I remember that. Yes.
Seattle blows out Carolina. I come on Monday morning, and this is, our show is brand new. I've always been a reporter, kind of just reporting the news, but no opinion. And I said, well, that tells me all I need to know about the relationship between Cam Newton and Ron Rivera. If Cam Newton respected Ron Rivera, he would have worn that tie. And if Ron Rivera had the respect of the team, they would have told Cam Newton, dude, wear the tie. Ron Rivera's lost the Panthers. Sure enough, I also, Ryan, like you, I've got to do sideline work where it's a different hat, different role, and suddenly I'm giving injury reports, and my very next game is Atlanta Falcons, Carolina Panthers, which means on Friday morning I'm going to be in the facility
face-to-face
with Ron Rivera, and I get a heads up from their PR guy, Stephen Drummond, and says, hey, I know you don't think anything of it or anything, but like Ron's not thrilled with what you said. And in the future, you've got to address it. I go, okay, well, let's do a man-to-man thing. I go in and I come in hat in hand and I just start the conversation. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I apologize. It's what I thought. It doesn't come from anything that other than my gut instinct. And I'm still fit. And he cuts me off and he says, listen, he goes, I was going to fuck with you. I was going to give you the riot act, the whole thing, but I could tell you that you're genuinely upset. But he says, just if you're going to talk about something that's going on in our locker room and you have all the sources and you have all the contacts, hit me up first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hit me up first. Just give me a heads up and I will maybe explain it for you, or hit Cam up or something. But don't be one of these guys on TV that just pops off for the sake of it because you look stupid. I'm not even insulted. You look stupid when you say that because I haven't lost this locker room. These are my guys. These guys will bleed for me and I'll bleed for them and all thing. But whatever happened between me and Cam, and I was like, wow, what a good life lesson. But also, you've got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it. We have to see these people. There are a lot of people on TV that work in Bristol in a closed off setting, or work on NFL Network or work on Fox, and they go to the studio and then they go home and they check their Instagram or Twitter and they say, all right, whatever. But we have to actually deal with these people.
The guys that go in the locker room, you have to have more respect. And you can tell the people that go in locker rooms and the people that don't. Because we're having this conversation because we're in locker rooms, and the people that don't have this conversation. They run radio shows and do different shit and say whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
It's a lonely existence, man. Like to live that type of life, whether you're writing it in the local media or you're working on a national scale. I'll share a quick story. I remember in 2004, we're playing the wild card game, Minnesota Vikings versus the Green Bay Packers. They beat us twice that year by 3 points. We go there and we're facing Brett Favre in the playoffs. First game, we come out, and that was the game where Randy Moss simulated the moon and did all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We beat the brakes off the Packers. Beat the brakes off them. It really wasn't a game. Had control the whole time. And we're celebrating in the locker room, and I scored a touchdown. Randy scored a touchdown. It was like one of my big boy moments. I'm sitting next to Randy in a playoff game, and everybody was just jubilant. And the reporters started to crowd around Randy because they want to talk to Randy. They want to talk about the game, the win, and also the celebration. And as he's slowly getting undressed, because he would like milk it and make sure they had to wait and shut up and just watch him. And I was always fascinated by the dynamic and how he talked to the media and how they responded to him. And as he's getting undressed and he gives the like, all right, come on. They all take like 3 steps closer. He points out one guy. He's like, hey, you're from the local media in Minnesota, right? And this guy's like, yeah. And then he's like, you write about the team all season, right? And the guy's like, kind of like, yeah, that's me. Yeah. He was like, I seen everything that you wrote. He said, you don't think we pay attention? You've been dogging us all year. Now you want to come in here with a smile on your face and act like you've been riding for us? No, you have been riding for us. Don't step up here in front of my face and act like you haven't been dogging me out personally and also as an athlete. He's like, don't ever ask me a question the rest of my career. I will never talk to you. Ooh. And in this moment, you've seen like all of these reporters literally like take steps away
just
from him.
Shrink.
It might as well have been like a spotlight on him, like a movie, and him just gets smaller and smaller. And I remember I was so uncomfortable. This is the first time I've ever seen a player talk to a member of the media. And mind you, 22-year-old Nate, I don't know any better than to treat the media like gold. And I think, because I'm naive, every person that's in your locker room is your friend. Mm-hmm. And Randy taught me a great lesson right there, that one, not every dude that's going to shove a microphone or every woman that's going to shove a microphone in front of your face after a game has your back. And pay attention to what these people say about you. Because if you don't know how they feel about you, then they can always fool you when they're face-to-face with you. And that guy just like shrunk in the moment and walked away. Yeah. And everybody else came. Randy put a smile on his face. And I thought like, damn, that was my second year in the league. Mm. And from then on, I understood it. I got it. And I knew how to handle the media. And I knew how to handle that relationship.
It's insane how good Randy Moss is now on TV, right?
Yeah,
like after like,
because he wasn't perceived as that guy.
No, he wasn't, and now he's like he's the best. He's one of the best on TV. It's great.
Nate, what was he like as a teammate? Like, what? Because I was just thinking that too. I was like, I never would have pictured Randy Moss as a dude who's on NFL Countdown,
right?
How many years later? Well, and obviously there was a lot with Randy during those days. But what was it like being playing with him?
I was drafted in 03. This was the height of, I would say, Randy Moss's Minnesota Vikings popularity. It was very polarizing. Everything he did on the field was like he was a creative player in Madden. He was the fastest. He could jump the highest. He was smooth in the air. But also he had like incidents. I remember he like bumped a traffic cop with his car, basically like nudged her, like get out the way. And she flopped like Vlade Divac. And then he was like, you're an animal. You try to run a woman over, which wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And then he had that incident and he was asked about it. And he said, well, shoot, I'm going to pay straight cash, homie.
Yeah.
And then something else that he said that never really got out to the media, but it was in the local media that they always have on camera. Somewhere out there, and he was like, next time I might just take my and shake it on you, you know what I'm saying? Like, so that was Randy Moss, and people thought he was very, very talented, but he was disruptive and was a cancer, and that's why they ended up trading him. Before they traded him to the Oakland Raiders, I remember sitting in a car with him. We were headed to Rochester, Minnesota, which is like an hour and a half away from Eden Prairie, where our facility was. I used to go to a few local signings, you know, get me $1,000 or so. And this was like my first big signing. It was like I was making like $2,500. And I get in the limo and Randy was in there. Randy didn't do these things, but he was getting paid a lot more. So it was an hour and a half drive. I'm chilling with Randy Moss. So in my head, I'm like, don't mess this up. Don't mess this up. Don't say nothing stupid. Don't mess this up. So there's like a little bit of drink in there. We're drinking, relaxing. And I don't say anything. I literally just shut up. He's having side conversations with the guy who organized it. And then out of nowhere, he just starts talking. He starts talking about how he has a bubble around him and how people think he's closed off and guarded. And he's like, you know why, though? It's because the closest people have done me dirty. Mm. I'm talking family members, man, that have stolen from me. I'm talking relatives that have come and sat in my house and have walked away with stuff that wasn't their property. People try to ask me for money. People trying to steal money from me. He's like, so every person I trusted dating back to when I was younger in some form or fashion has screwed me over, or at least tried to. Mm. So now the easiest thing is to create a bubble. That way you can't even get close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it was crazy because you know how you're a teammate, and when somebody says something about your teammate and you read it and you hear it over and over again, it's not that you think that, but you start to like see, like sense in it.
They start
convincing you a little bit. So as I'm talking to Randy, I'm listening to him like, bro, I get you 100% now. Like, there is nothing about Randy Moss that I don't understand. So when I would meet people and they're like, yo, Randy Moss was an asshole, right? Like, Randy Moss was a bad teammate, right? Randy Moss was selfish, right? I'm like, nah, on the contrary. Like, he was good to everybody that was in the family. He was good to everybody that was in the organization. It was just the people that did him wrong. And if you misjudge Randy out the gate, he wasn't going to stop you. Mm. He would let you. Like, you know, we're in a world where, like, people want to prove who they are. I'm a good dude. Don't worry about my past. Don't worry about the papers. I'm a nice guy. Randy was like, all right, cool. If you think you know who I am, I'm going to let you believe that. I'm just not going to rock with you. Mm. So Randy was amazing, man.
There's power in that, though.
Yeah, there's power
in
that.
You know what I'm
saying? There's leverage in that.
Yeah.
And Randy Moss did that, and he was good to me, man. He taught me how to be a pro. He didn't like, right away involve all the rookies. Like, when you come in, certain vets, like, they keep their distance. And not in a way that he didn't help me, but he was just like, I want to see which one of these dudes are actually going to commit. Mm. Like, it was like 6 or 7 months after I got drafted where Randy Moss had a real conversation with me.
Is that right?
And I realized that he wanted to see if I loved the game as much as him, I worked as hard as him, and I was committed to the game. People don't understand, Randy loved the game.
Yeah.
He would walk away from a meeting and be like, yo, I got to go get massage treatment. I have to go to my chiropractor, and then I have to go get these muscles dug in. I have to go basically get a 3-hour treatment after practice because I want to be ready for game day. And I remember the moment where we became cool going into my second year, he basically was telling me, like, I seen you work. I understand that you're here for the right reasons. I'm about to give you these gems that are going to last a lifetime. And he said, and I remember asking him, like, why don't you really get, like, attached to guys? Like, why don't you, like, you kind of guard it? He said, because the league will get rid of guys so quickly. So if I invest in somebody's friendship and that guy either tricks off his career because he's an idiot or the league cuts somebody, then that's just another life lost. I'm not going to get that invested in a dude. And it made sense.
Really. Wow, that's an interesting perspective, too, from Randy. Like, it's funny because you almost would think like, nah, he's just like kind of standoffish, whatever. You don't realize there's like a method to it until you.
Can I give a Randy Moss story?
I would love
so
that.
I worked at Fox Sports with Randy. Before he did ESPN Countdown, he was on Fox Sports NFL Kickoff with us. It was Urlacher, Randy Moss, myself, Champ Bailey, and I think Joel Klatt, who now does college football, was our host. And we would do the show on Sunday, and then just before Good Morning Football, we would stay in LA on Monday. And on Mondays, we would do a show, like the preview show before Monday Night Football, and then we'd do the wrap-up show. So we would do a show around like 3 o'clock Pacific, and then we'd be back in the studio by like 7 o'clock. And every week, Randy would disappear at 3 o'clock and come back at the end while the rest of us would get dinner, would hang out and everything. And one time, Randy was like, Shregs, you want to come with me on a ride? And I'm like, sure, I'll go with Randy Moss on a ride. Like, yeah, hey, let's go.
What do you mean?
Exactly. So as we're getting out, he sat there, and like the security guard, whose name I don't recall right now, but an older gentleman, probably 60 years old, comes there, and Randy goes, you good? He goes, yeah. He goes, all right, come on, let's go. And he gets in the car with us. And I'm like, why is the security guard getting in the car with us? What is going on now? And we drive, and we drive, and we drive, and Randy's driving a rental car, and I'm in the driver in the passenger seat, and this guy's in the back, and we're just talking life. Like, this guy was from Philly, Randy's talking to him, but they're talking like they are best friends. So I'm like, what is going on here? Then we go through, and Randy looks at me, he's like, we're in Crenshaw right now. Do you know Crenshaw, Shregs? I'm like, I know, obviously I know about it, but I've never been here, whatever. And we're driving, and then we're in East LA, and all of a sudden we drop off literally 90 minutes from the studio in LA, and he stops at this house, and he drops off the guy, and they dap each other up, and then we get back in, and he's like, all right, we'll get some food, then we'll drive back to the studio. I go, what was that? He goes, oh, you know, he takes the bus home every day for 2 hours. So on Mondays when I'm still here, I like to give him a ride back in a car.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I asked him the first day. I drove out of the studio and I saw him waiting at the bus stop. And I was like, no, I can't have that. This man works all day and he's got a family. Like, I'm going to drive him back. So I'm like, you never told anyone that you don't do, you know, he's like, no, and don't tell anyone that. And
he hates that.
He didn't. And he would probably, he would roll his eyes at me right now. Like, ah, oh, you told that, but it's 10 years removed, whatever. But he said every Monday without anyone knowing, everyone thought he was dipping out to who knows what in his hotel room and then, you know, not be with us and do his own thing and be a loner. He was driving a gentleman who takes the bus to and from work back by car so he could have a friend and can drive him back all the way out in East LA. And then he would come back and do the show. And I was like, holy shit, did I misjudge you? And not and not like in a bad way. I just assumed that you were doing what anyone was doing. You're just getting, you know, you're getting away. But that was Randy, and he was like, do not tell a soul. He did not want that out there.
On Tuesdays, when guys would go do charitable causes, he would go out there and do all this stuff in the community. And when guys wanted to make sure the news cameras were there at their events, Randy never told a soul. And I remember talking to him about that, like, yo, like, man, people are really dogging you, bro. Like, we should just tell people, like, what you do. Like, every Tuesday, you're changing lives. And he's like, nah, I don't need to get the limelight for that. And I just thought that was like powerful because like most guys in the league, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Like you're calling every outlet there is because you want to look like a superstar.
Did you see what I did today? Exactly. Oh my gosh. Sure. Those are fantastic Randy stories. Yeah. You know, when I think about too, like just I'm 33 in my life, like the athletes who you just like, wow, this is a different level of talent than I'm used to or seen. He's one of those, he's like at the, you know, in the top five in my life that like when you watch him for the first time, you're like, whoa, that guy is just different, man. Like I remember watching his game against the Cowboys where he had the 3 touchdowns. Yeah, and it was like, yeah, Thanksgiving, the breakout game. And you're just like, when he went down the sideline and you think for sure he's going out of bounds and all of a sudden he just turns on the burners
so
and you're like, what? And playing Madden with him. You remember what that was like, man?
Dreamcast. Where you can like boost him up. Oh, and he was unstoppable in that game.
Oh my gosh.
He was unstoppable.
Breaking news, after more than 18 months of research and development, the Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they have successfully created the greatest down-there hair trimmer ever created.
It is.
This new trimmer was just released, and we are the first to confirm the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 manscaping trimmer is now available for purchase. We got to try it out.
Yes.
And C clearly is very thrilled with the results.
I love it.
This third generation Manscaped trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Nobody wants an accident down there.
Nobody wants an accident down there, guys.
Millions of assets
are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. If you use the Lawnmower 2.0, it's an easy transition because it's the same replacement blade with a new and improved skin-safe technology. When I tell you this is premium, I mean premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer...
Bro, you got 90 minutes!
One of the coolest new features is the LED light, which illuminates grooming areas for a closer and more precise trimming. They've also upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. And let's not forget about the charging stand. Show your mower off loud and proud because this intelligently designed stand is a rapid charging dock powered by USB. If you're listening to me speak right now, you're one of the first people to hear about this life-changing product, and I want you to experience it firsthand for yourself. Preferably for fewer than 90 minutes.
Please don't let it take you 90 minutes.
Trim that area of yours. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code R2C2 at manscaped.com. By the way, I've had so many people reach out, so happy with the product. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And no. Now this is like a next level of it. But yeah, people
Lawnmower 3.0.
Right. You got you. There you go. CC knows, and now you can too. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the code R2C2. And as always, your area will thank you. Speaking of like ridiculously talented players, is Patrick Mahomes, I'll start with you, Peter, is he the most talented football player you've ever seen?
Yes. Yes. I had a chance to do sidelines for the week 3 game against the 49ers a year ago. So this is before the MVP season really took off, but it's Chiefs 49ers, and Andy Reid, who I've known forever, pulls me into his office, the coach's office, and it almost looked like John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, like with Russell Crowe, with all these crazy play designs, all his diagrams. And he looked at me and said, you know how hard this guy can throw. You know how fast he is. You know how amazing his arm is. What you don't know and what you will learn over the next course of the rest of the season and moving forward is that he's got a photographic memory. So you can give him any play. He looks at it once, he remembers it, and then he can just regurgitate it. He goes, I had Michael Vick, I had Donovan McNabb, I had Alex Smith. No one has the capacity to retain and regurgitate information intellectually in a football sense like this kid. And it's amazing that he was not one of these players that was handed a football at the crib and said, you will be a quarterback. He played 3 sports. He had other interests, played baseball. His dad was a baseball player, played basketball at a high level, was an all-county basketball player in Texas, and just happens to be an intellectual savant paired with all the athletic ability. So I respect the hell out of Tom Brady. I think Lamar Jackson does amazing things. This kid can throw 80 yards, has the greatest demeanor out there, but also retains every single play in the playbook and is almost like a computer out there. So I've never seen anything like it, and I've been so overwhelmed with what a great, humble kid he is. He's the perfect ambassador for the sport.
That's an awesome, awesome story, too, from Reed. And it's just giving that perspective, man.
The most talented quarterback ever? I'm going to say no.
Okay.
You mentioned Michael Vick. I feel like Michael Vick was the most gifted quarterback to ever touch the field. He was as fast as anybody. We're talking 4.2 speed. And if you talk to people that watched him play, they would always say the way he threw the ball was effortless. So he could throw it 80 yards. I mean, the commercial you remember the commercial where he threw it over the stadium?
Speaking of Madden cheat codes.
Exactly. He was a 99 in Madden. Yeah. But the reason I bring up Michael Vick, and it's perfect when talking about Pat Mahomes, if somebody were to say, all right, I'll give you Michael Vick with great study habits, because even Michael Vick would tell you, bro, the tape set in my trunk, like they had dust on them. Like if I can go back, I would actually like been a student of the game. It would have made me better. So take Michael Vick. You make him a student of the game, turn him into a right-handed thrower, and then you stretch his ass out 3 or 4 inches. That's Pat Mahomes.
That's Pat Mahomes. Mm.
So that's the crazy part. Now, of course, Pat Mahomes isn't as fast as Michael Vick, but if you look at Pat Mahomes' size and the way that he's built, he is surprisingly fast. Like this dude could run with the best of them. The fact that he's so intelligent, and as crazy of throws that he can make, he doesn't make a lot of bad throws. I remember one summer, a couple of seasons ago, before he started for the first time, he had like a lot of interceptions in one practice. we came on the show because there's nothing to talk about in the offseason. We're like, man, well, listen, you know, Pat Mahomes, he threw a lot of picks.
Are they going to miss Alex Smith?
Are they going to miss him? They traded Alex Smith to Washington, and we had this whole show about maybe he's not ready and he was drafted too soon. And I remember Andy Reid coming out, and he just quickly responded to it, and that was that. He said, well, we got to see what he can do. Like, we got to see what throws he can actually throw. And I bet you it was one of those practices where Andy was like, Pat, let it fly.
Yeah, push
and
it.
And at that point, you understand what you can do and what you can't do. And what he did in that first year on the field, it was his second season in the NFL, he proved that he can do everything that traditional quarterbacks do. He can do everything that Tom Brady can do. Drop back 7 yards, hit every single route on the route tree. And then he proved that he can do things that we haven't even seen before. With traffic coming, the pocket collapsing, he throws a no-look pass over the middle against the Baltimore Ravens that had one of the best defenses that year. Oh, and then not to mention, he can use his legs like everybody else. And then you add in the nugget that Peter's talking about, that he has the retention to remember anything. Like, this dude is just getting started. And if you think about some of the games that he lost, Kyle Brandt, who is one of our beautiful minds on the show, said, Pat Mahomes has played he's played 2 years of football.
He's played 37 games.
37 games. He's never lost a game by more than 7 points. Wow, we see teams get smoked that all the
time. That is ridiculous, man. That's ridiculous.
Tom Brady got smoked this year. Russell Wilson, name a team that didn't get smoked this year.
Don't get blown out, yeah. Bro, that's true.
That's a great point, man. That's a great point.
Crazy.
You know, you brought up the thing about playing all the sports. That's something to see is so passionate
I'm huge
about.
On that, and I honestly think that's why he can recall shit. Because of, you know, you playing the other sports and different things, and your mind works different when you got to make pitches. He's a pitcher. So he has to recall, like, what the guy did the last time and all of that shit and try to make pitches. And I got him out here this last time, and I got, you know, I got to get him out of the way this time. I'm sure his dad talked to him about being on the mound.
Even
and
going, ball placement, right? When delivering the ball.
1,000%. And that all goes into remembering plays and having photographic memory and you know, like, having muscle memory and knowing, you know, throwing jump passes and no-look passes and shit. Yeah. That shit comes from basketball.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it all plays together. I think you just see the ultimate athlete in him, and it just so happens to be the Super Bowl MVP.
I'm boys with Kingsbury, who's now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, but was the guy who recruited and got Patrick Mahomes. And the second Mahomes got to Texas Tech, Kingsbury would tell the world, like, this is the greatest quarterback you'll ever see. Kingsbury says that in practice they would fuck around at Texas Tech, and he would literally throw behind-the-back passes just to see if he could do it and complete them on routes. Like, 16-yard out, he's going to throw behind-the-back and get you. Like, he's got this whole arsenal. The fact he doesn't go to that stuff so often tells you how mature and how developed he is, that he's like, all right, now's not the time, but I've got it if I need it. It's almost like Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to do the crazy dunk, but if it gets in the open court, like, I'll show you just to show you. I got that showmanship in me, too.
Like, I can actually do it. It's amazing. And you know what? Like, we talked about it the other day too. See, it's also, you know, you talk about the mental part. I also think just actual physical development, when you're playing a variety of sports, your full body develops better than if you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. Obviously, the easiest example of that is a pitcher, right?
Right.
If you're only pitching, you know, that might break down, you know?
Even like, baseball, though. I mean, just only playing baseball, only swinging a bat. Like, I mean, eventually, like, your back's going to go out. Rotation, like, all that shit. Like, you can only do it for so long, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy, like, when speaking about three-sport athletes and guys being a certain type of individual before they make professional sports. Like, Jay-Z said, what'd he say? He said, you know, I walk like a ball player. No matter who you are what you are, player.
Yeah.
Like, you look at George Kittle. Like, he's a big WWE guy. Mm-hmm. It spills out.
Yeah.
On the field, like he's this character now. We all love it, and it almost makes him a better football player.
It's a character,
but it spills out on the field.
It even makes guys scared to tackle him because they know he's crazy as hell. Yeah. Right? Trying to run your ass over.
And then with Pat Mahomes, like, you'll see like glimpses of all these other sports and just the subtleties in his play, whether it's a pass that he's throwing and like the freeze frame looks like a pitcher throwing a pitch.
We say it looks like Jason Williams from the Kings.
Yeah. He'll literally show you three different sports. He's playing football. He'll throw a pass like a pitcher, and then he'll shoot a jumper while he's celebrating. Like, that right there is basically telling all the kids in the world, hey, listen, do as much as you can. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then once you need to choose, you choose and pick a lane, but don't pick a lane at 9 years old. That's the worst thing
you can do. That's the worst
thing. Oh my gosh! Yeah, no. It happens. I feel like more and more. Hopefully,
and it's the parents.
Yes,
it's the dads.
100%.
100%.
Hopefully, when credentialed people like yourselves are, you know, with a platform, who are saying like, "Look what I did in my career. Trust me, you shouldn't be going to one sport right away. Hopefully at some point it sinks into the parents' minds, the value.
No, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah,
so I think it's going even further the other way.
These guys have a different perspective. I got a young one, but these guys have teenage sons. I got to ask you, like, what do you see in the Jersey dad scene? Is it the lacrosse dad, the hockey dad, and it's just, my son's going to be the next great thing?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what I said. It's just going crazy the other way. And a little bit is the coaches, too, but...
Are you hearing this stuff at games, too, when you're at games? Are you hearing parents talk
about
this?
Well, I just always... People always ask me, is Little T going to play baseball? Because all they see him play is basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, he fucking plays baseball, too. Like,
yeah,
he's playing basketball, like, to have fun.
It's winter. Yeah,
it's wintertime. Yeah. What, you want to go swing a fucking bat in a cage for fucking 3 months?
Yeah, yeah.
No, go shoot baskets.
Yeah.
But go have fun on the court.
How many coaches have approached you and wanted him to focus on one sport year-round?
Yeah.
It happens all the time, right?
All the time.
I'm pretty sure baseball coach was like, well, you know what, CeCe, listen, your son should play baseball year-round. It's like, nah, man, I want him to be a well-rounded athlete.
And they want me to say that I want him to play baseball. I'm like, no, they try to tee it up for me every time. No.
Yeah.
I'm going to let him play basketball as long as he want to play basketball. I don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? I don't care. It is what it is.
It's also, you just touch on the enjoyment factor too. Like, ultimately, when we all start to play sports, we do it because it's fun, because we like it. If all of a sudden, at a very young age, it feels like a job, you know what? Now, I don't have the same heart and investment and passion in it because I feel like I'm just being manicured for a goal that maybe isn't even mine.
Do I know in the draft thing? I remember one of the craziest pre-draft critiques I got, and I talked to all the scouts and all the others. Josh Rosen was coming out and I was like, he's kind of an arrogant kid. And one of the coaches said something that really bothered me, but it's interesting with the sports. He said, and he was a tennis player. And I'm like, oh, so you think he's soft? He's like, no. He's a tennis player, so it's an individual sport. So he's in his head. So he was a high level tennis player. So I don't know if I want to deal with that. And I'm like, man, he played tennis. That's a great thing. He's competitive. He's kind of like...
But then again, think about what he's been through over the last couple of years. Maybe that coach was onto something.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is
with the individual sport, right? Like golf, tennis. Right.
There's something about being able to coexist with your teammates on the basketball court, football court, and even, let's take it a step further. Like, being on a show like this, like, you have to coexist with your other hosts. There's never been a selfish moment on this show for me or even my co-hosts. Like, I want everybody to shine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a ride for these guys. Like, even so much so, we had D'Angelo Williams on the show. That's my guy, former teammate.
If you're at home, Google D'Angelo Williams, Good Morning Football.
It's a fun moment.
Not for everyone. Yeah.
But that's my guy. I'm always
telling the story.
I'm always going to ride for the fraternity. That's the football players. He comes in, and D'Angelo comes in hot. That's what he does.
For whatever reason.
He got hot takes. He knows the sport, and he want to make sure he's impactful whenever he's on TV. And he heard us talking casually about Gronk being a Hall of Famer during a commercial break. As soon as he sits down, he's like, you guys already crowned him in the Hall of Fame. So now we're on the defensive a little bit as a show, but we think it's funny. It's all an act. And then Peter and Kyle start talking, and then he just starts taking shots.
He's so like, I'm a reporter who didn't play. Kyle played at Princeton, so he played at a high level, but he didn't play in the pros. Yeah. I didn't play shit.
So he looks at Peter, he's like, you never played the game. You never played. You're on the sideline. That's not the same thing.
I laugh at it.
He laughed at it. Yeah. Kyle's like, ah, whatever. I mean, Peter's like, ah, whatever. And then he's like, what you laughing at, dude? Like, you never played. And I had to jump in. I'm like, nah, listen, Peter's one of the best insiders. He's been around sport forever.
I'm also fine with
it. Yeah. And I'm like, like, Kyle played at Princeton. Like, he played at a high level. That's collegiate football.
Yeah.
And he's like, Princeton.
But Kyle didn't laugh.
And he didn't laugh. And he was like,
Kyle then comes out, where'd you play? Memphis? And then it gets like super like, and then
awkward.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like,
super awkward.
And he's
like,
Jason Garrett's the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He was a Princeton Tigers quarterback. I was a captain at Princeton. You're going to question my credit? And then
Kyle goes deeper and he's like, listen, I've been banged up. I've dealt with the same injury you dealt with. I've dealt with concussions like you. And then D'Angelo doesn't quit. He's always
fired
back.
He's all in.
He's like, concussions at Princeton? What, a slip and fall in a shower? And I'm like, oh, damn. So now,
I'm definitely going to Google this.
It was crazy. So now, like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, look, first I'm sitting back because I know it's good TV.
And we're also both, me and Kyle now, I'm a little triggered, but now Kyle's like defensive and to his credit, whatever, he handled it fine. But we're looking at Nate, not to save us, but like, hey, Nate.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, come on and chime in and get our back here. Who's this guy?
And I had to tell him. I reiterated what Peter has been through, how long he's been around the game. In college football, there's nothing to laugh at, especially being a running back. You should identify with that, D'Angelo. And he's just kind of like, whatever, whatever. And here's the thing about D'Angelo. The segment's over, and he's literally laughing. It's not a big deal. It wasn't personal. It was like, this is going to be great TV.
But he was playing the heel.
Kyle's steaming, though.
Yeah. Kyle was bad.
Because you're also disrespecting the fact that he put the same amount of work in as you.
Yeah.
He just didn't make it as far. You know what I'm saying? I also earned a scholarship and gave everything I got to this sport. And D'Angelo walks off, he laughs, and everything's cool.
He had a good time.
But it's funny, though. It's funny because you read the reactions on Twitter, and some people are like, damn, D'Angelo's coming in hot. That's hella disrespectful. And other people are like, yo, Nate, like, you should have been had D'Angelo back. Other people were like, yo, Nate, you should have had your people's back.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can't win for losing. But what I understood is, in that moment, I'm not going to sit here and be like the ball player. I'm going to respect the fact that I'm part of this team.
Mm.
I played on the team of the NFL, so I rock with D'Angelo that way. I never played on his team, or he played on mine. The team I'm on right now is Good Morning Football. So there was no way I could have sat out that whole time and not said anything. You know what I'm saying? He needs to understand that. D'Angelo, I get where you come from. We came from the same place. But you can't disrespect my dudes, though.
The greatest quality that Nate has, and I'm not trying to bloviate on how great Nate Burleson is. You can read any press clipping, you'll get that. But Nate validates me and Kyle in a way that I can't explain on this show. I'm not saying I'm not a cool guy or I can't, but like, Nate laughing at our jokes, Nate validating my opinion. Like,
and vice versa.
But to have the ex-player be there at the table and not just dismiss us as the nerd with the notebook and the pen or the funny guy over there, to actually treat us and our opinions as equal, it goes so far. And I think that's really the magic of our show and our chemistry as four hosts. And Nate is probably the most important piece in that, because all he has to do is tune us out and disregard our opinions, and then the viewer sees that, and it's like, oh, well, the ex-player doesn't think that these
you
guys
got
know.
It.
Yeah. And that's that.
You got it.
And the viewers, we pick up on that shit quick.
Yeah.
Really quick.
100%. It's so true. Like, if you want the show to succeed, you need every single piece of it to be credible.
Yeah.
And what D'Angelo did was, even though he thought it was just for fun or whatever, if I was Kyle, that would have really pissed me off too, because what you're doing is you're undermining my credibility, right? Like, I can remember the only time
Because a lot of guys would do the nervous laugh when D'Angelo's doing that, and it's be like, and then feel like crap the rest of the day. Kyle actually stood up for himself. I was proud of him.
Before you get to your story, this is the last thing Kyle said. Kyle said, all right, keep it real. I'm telling you, it happened.
On
air, right before the commercial break, he's like, all right, D'Angelo, so plug your show or whatever you got going on. And he's like, oh, I don't have anything going on. He's like, exactly, we're going to commercial break.
Wow. Yeah. Oh,
that's exactly what
that
we did.
That's harsh, man.
Oh, he just got real.
So man, you won.
That is,
he won.
Oh, man. That was hard.
He won his
Oh, my God. Wow. That was a...
It was a crazy segment, bro.
It was. And we were shaking
on his face at the end. Yeah.
Well, man. What was this? I missed it.
We're YouTubing it right after we're done here, man.
You're pitching in a World Series. Sorry you missed that episode.
But you know what? To CeCe's credit, the same way you feel about Nate is how I feel about C. Like, it gives me credibility. And it also gives me credibility then in the clubhouse with his teammates and everything, too, to know, like, no, you know, no matter what, it's like at least there's some level of respect there then. But my radio co-host, who I loved, and I hosted for a while with Robin Lumberg, who I still love, good friend. Stephen A. Smith was my co-host for 2 years. And then Stephen A. and I are still close this day. And then Dave Rothenberg. And Dave was the one who I probably had the easiest time hosting with. Like, we just vibed on air. It was really like we had a great, great time. I think you were on with us at some point. Yeah. He was a great time. But during one show at some point, like, I made some reference to something, like, I was some, I don't know what it was.
Pop culture or sports?
No, it was some team in the 70s who had a nickname or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was helping to emphasize a point I was making. And he was on the other side of the argument, and he's like, name the player. Like, he was like, name the players who are part of it right now. Name all the players who are part of it, whatever. And, you know, it was on the spot. We're about to go to commercial.
You don't know the purple people eaters.
It was It was like I could name three of the five I was referring to.
I don't
right
know everybody
away,
on the steel curtain defense.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It was like that kind of thing. And you can't. And as soon as we went to break, like, I flipped out on him. I was like, bro, that is not cool.
Was you going to fight him, Cuz?
Yeah.
You wasn't cussing
him. Come on, let me tell you something.
Was you going
to
fight him, Cuz?
You've seen, I do have an angry side of me. But no, my point to him is immediately, like, you do that. Like, don't do that. Like, immediately now you're discredited. No, we're just in arguments, entertaining. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
There's a difference between I have respect for your knowledge and I'm just presenting something in an entertaining way and we're in disagreement versus like I'm trying to diminish your ability to even have an argument.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's one thing to call you out, another thing to try to make you look stupid.
Yes, yes, and that's exactly, what exactly.
If you're listening to this show, you're probably a sports fan, and any smart, engaged sports fan should check out our sponsor, The Athletic. See, you're a big fan of The Athletic.
Yeah, I love The Athletic.
You have the app and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's very impressive. Yeah. So The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site for real fans, in-depth coverage and exclusive stories from an all-star team of sports writers, including national writers like Ken Rosenthal, Jason Stark, and Peter Gammons. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news. You know what else I like? They invested in like their writers, their product, and it's clear that people love the product because the subscribers keep coming. I love that.
I love the fact that they have writers in every clubhouse. That's something that, I mean, you can't write an article about a team if you're not with them
yeah.
and you don't know the player. So The Athletic does a great job of that.
And Nate, you can customize your app or the website based on what city you're in and what teams you like to follow, to your point, with those writers who are actually in the locker room or clubhouse. It's awesome. You get full access to all sports teams, cities, and writers, and you can customize and choose the content you care about. The Athletic is the one-stop shop for passionate sports fans. No ads, pop-ups, or clickbait, just great content. I love that part of it, too, that you don't have to work through any ads.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. We've talked about it before on this show. We both love The Athletic. Just download The Athletic app, pick your favorite teams, and The Athletic will begin surfacing all the latest on the players and storylines that matter to you. Ready to get started? For 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic. It's pretty good. That's like that's a chunky discount
right
there.
That's a big discount right there.
Go to theathletic.com/R2C2. That's all lowercase. That's theathletic.com/R2C2, all lowercase, for 40% off now.
Hey, you guys want to hit a couple NFL topics?
Yeah, quick hits here.
All right, I know you guys do that every morning, but you know, this is fantastic. I love like that. I love like the media perspective too, and the stories. It's great. All right, so first of all, with Tom Brady, do we really believe there's any chance that he doesn't go back to New England?
No, no. I mean, well, yeah, he's going back to New England. I don't think there's a chance.
No, there's no chance he leaves.
There's no chance he leaves.
Yeah.
Tom Brady will be a New England Patriot. I feel like with all the talk around Tom Brady being a free agent, I think it's just him taking his time to get back on the field. I said it before and I'll say it again. I love saying it whenever I have a microphone because it gets people riled up. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, but he's also the greatest system player of all time. When I say system, I don't mean that as disrespectful. I just feel like he has survived and thrived in a system for so long that it turned into a benefit. They can recall plays from 20 years ago when they're on the sideline making an adjustment versus a young rookie who literally has a playbook that's 5 pages long. So that's what I mean by system. Does Tom Brady want to have to go somewhere and reset the system? No, he doesn't. So he's going to put back on the Patriots uniform and ride it out.
It's going to be a really fun deal because I think he might actually meet with some other teams, which to me is just
such a fascinating.
Can you imagine him? He's in the Chargers facility or he's in the Titans facility taking a visit. Like, I think he'll end up with New England in the end. But the mere fact that it's not a foregone conclusion, the mere fact that he isn't already under contract, that he's even hitting free agency, is a monster story.
If that happens, wouldn't it be paparazzi everywhere? Like,
but I don't, like, I've seen Joe Montana playing a different uniform.
Chiefs uniform, yeah.
I've seen Brett Favre playing a different uniform.
And both went
literally
to the playoffs.
In the same division.
And both went to the
playoffs.
So,
like,
it's not that crazy.
It's not that crazy for me to see Tom Brady play somewhere else.
What, do we know That's why? True. Like, what is the motivation behind this? Is it just he finally doesn't want to take a discount?
He wants to get paid?
He's trying to hold him accountable for the front office. Is that what he's doing?
I spoke with him week 16. We did the Bills-Patriots game. It was me, Tarico, and Kurt Warner, and I spoke with him. And his whole thing was, I've said it on the air a bunch, there is a certain standard of excellence I expect. And with what we were trotting out on the field, not blaming the players, I could not reach that this year.
Yeah.
Meaning, You cannot blame Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry for not being 10-year veterans. They're not Antonio Brown. They just got to the league. He's like, I'm just so frustrated by the standard of excellence that I have, and we're not even going to come close to it this season. So what does that tell me? You better go break the bank on every other player that's a free agent this offseason.
Yeah, it almost reminds me a little like how LeBron operates sometimes, where it's like...
Well, it's 1,000% how LeBron operates. You can't get complacent with your superstar. Mm-hmm. I feel like Green Bay did that a bunch of years with Aaron Rodgers, where you just like got this great quarterback, and hopefully he can win me a Super Bowl. Like, he did it one time, but put some fucking players over there so he can try, like, so you have a better chance of, you know, having a dynasty with these type of elite quarterbacks.
Yeah, 100%. All right, how about the reaction to Jimmy G after the Super Bowl? I have to tell you, I thought it was far too harsh. I understand that, you know, he threw an eyes closed interception. And How is that too harsh,
well, dude?
Well, you know. Bro, it's the Super Bowl. Do you hear yourself right now?
It's a bad look.
He threw a bad look. But during the Super Bowl game, he threw a pass.
He did. It's not ideal. I'm not saying I want other quarterbacks following his lead here. But I also feel like he didn't make the throw. And it's, you know, we talk about NBA make or miss league, right? You know, make or miss in this case. But if he connects on that, you know,
but if he did,
we're talking about he was playing a very like a quality game for the vast majority of it. It's not like he was an epic disaster and we go back and look at the season was.
When it was time for him to like step up and make throws, that shit was an epic disaster. He closed his eyes and threw a ball, and then Emmanuel Sanders is wide open. That's the game. He overthrew him by 15 fucking yards.
He did.
That's an epic disaster.
But now you're going to all of a sudden question if he's your guy?
That's an epic disaster. But
would that make you question if he's your guy?
If he makes the throw. If ifs were fifths, we'd all be drunk. Yeah. So, like, when it comes to those plays and those moments, and I hate to take it to money, and Peter always says, it's all about money, Nate, but if he was a young quarterback on a rookie deal, I'd be like, you know what? He's not necessarily paid to make that play. Mm. He's still on a rookie deal. Like, he's a young guy. They paid him $100+ million,
bro.
And listen, I'm also talking about one of my former quarterbacks, Matt Stafford. If you pay a guy $100 million, that means you're making the decision. You're going to be one of the highest paid, which means we can't give other guys as much money. At some point, you're going to have to carry us. At some point, you're going to have to be that guy. You have to make those throws. $100+ million quarterback makes that throw to Emmanuel Sanders.
Let me say this. Okay, I will say this. He got put in a bad situation, though. All they had to do was just keep handing the ball off or get a ball to Deebo Sanders.
But the Chiefs were blitzing and started bringing pressure. Like, you can't run the ball into a blitz.
That's true.
I feel like Kyle Shanahan at one point was like, damn, I can't run into this blitz. The Chiefs literally caught their bluff.
Here's the problem. Everyone was bloodthirsty to get at Garoppolo after they won with 8 completions in the NFC Championship. So that was the storyline all week long. Can he make the big play?
Is the team carrying him?
And then he didn't make it. So, of course, it's going to be that. But I'm telling you guys, he goes into New Orleans. They put up 48 points, and he leads them, and he throws 400 yards in the regular season. Like, they go week 17 into Seattle. Garoppolo was amazing.
Regular season. Was a big win.
Wins that game. Yeah,
yeah. Regular season, Shrakes.
I know.
Regular season. I'm talking about them. Let me ask you this. Does Tom Brady make that throw in the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean,
has he ever made that in the Super Bowl?
He has.
Eli Manning made that throw in the Super Bowl.
Well, like, so here's the flip side of that. Okay, I'm glad you brought up Eli. Because I was going to say, if you feel this way about Jimmy G, then you better start speaking a lot more praise to Eli Manning, because he's on the other side of that. He always made that throw in the biggest moment.
I've always said that Eli Manning turned into Joe Montana those two Super Bowl runs. He was literally Joe Montana for two Super Bowl runs.
Right.
But that's all that matters. He was Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's all that matters.
Here's the thing.
We always go back and forth about Eli.
I'm like, I don't need anything else from Eli other than he was great when you needed him to be great.
If he was a Raider, I would take that. If he was a Raider, I'd take that.
Two championships. Good night.
But let me ask it from this perspective, okay? Because, yes, if we're just evaluating the performance in that moment, is it a failure? Of course it is. However, where I felt like I disagreed was it became a projection of failure for his career.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either.
And I wouldn't – that was just my point. Is like, I wouldn't all of a sudden sell all my stock on Jimmy Garoppolo because of that performance. I don't take it necessarily as a precursor of what's to come in all the playoffs
to follow.
Part of the
deal, though, like, look, Jared Goff had the worst Super Bowl I can remember with that 13-3. And all offseason, it was like, Jared Goff is terrible. And this year, he wasn't good. So, like, it's on Jimmy to not have that be the narrative. Yeah. You have to change it.
One thing we do know,
he's a winner. You look at his record, he's a winner. The question is, because we don't have a sample size of him playing in the playoffs outside of this year, can he do it in the playoffs?
Got to a Super Bowl. Yeah.
He got to a Super Bowl, but he also won a playoff game where he completed 8 passes.
I was about to say.
And then in that second half of the Super Bowl, the Chiefs, I honestly believe they went to the sideline and were like, look,
make him
beat us. Let's blitz him and put the ball in Jimmy's hands. And he couldn't make it. And it wasn't even about the eyes closed. If you just look at the second half, and I'm giving you X's and O's real quick, and we'll move on. He was sailing balls. And you know what sailing balls mean? CeCe, you know, you're a thrower, bro. If you're throwing off your back leg, you're falling backwards. That means you're anticipating some type of hit and you're not grounded. Sometimes you got to take a shot to the chin and sit in that pocket. He didn't do that because he was feeling the pressure. And pressure busts pipes, man.
And to be honest, when Tom Brady was young and won that first Super Bowl, he probably couldn't make those throws, but he wasn't put in a situation where he had to.
Yeah. True.
You know what I'm saying?
He was very
Tom
much
Brady
managing
was clock managing
things.
The game and he had a great defense and all of that. Turned into the greatest quarterback of all time.
Right.
So, I mean, Jimmy G could turn it around.
Even think about what you've talked about with your own experience in the playoffs and how much different it felt to you pressure-wise early on versus how you ended up performing later in your career.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right? I always say, I mean, 2007, we should have won the World Series if I pitched the way I pitched, supposed to pitch.
Right. You feel like you let the team down?
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, that team should have won
the World Series. And if you hadn't won 2009, would you have had that over your head your entire life?
My entire life. Like, really? I mean, I lost so much sleep in between that playoffs in 07 and us winning in 09. I mean, even to the fact where I pitched great in Milwaukee or whatever, I still lost in the playoffs in Milwaukee. I gave up a grand slam in the playoffs in Milwaukee, so it was still like a big question mark, and it was a question mark in my heart and my head, too, for sure.
He was just waiting to get us that championship with the pinstripes. That's what was going on there, man. All right, how about this real quick to finish up? How about Giants, Jets, and Raiders projections? Raiders for this man over here, and Giants and Jets, because, you know, we do have a lot of New York listeners. I'm a Giants fan, so...
I feel like Derek Carr is going to have a decent season. I don't want to say great, and I know that isn't music to CC's ears, but when it comes to what he has around him, Josh Jacobs is phenomenal. That rookie doesn't run like a rookie. He's going to be a guy that we'll keep our eyes on as far as a perennial Pro Bowler. Tyrell Williams brought over from the Chargers, a good pickup. Darren Waller got his life together. That dude is a dog. Mm. I feel like they got the pieces, man. The only thing is that you're sitting there in the division where Pat Mahomes is basically running the world, man. And that's the only thing. Don't sleep on Drew Lock and Cortland Sutton out with the Broncos, man. There's some young players that we didn't mention this year that are going to make a statement next year. I feel like Drew Lock, Kyler Murray, a lot of these young guys are going to make a statement. So the AFC West, NFC West,
watching Drew Lock on the sideline do rap Jeezy on the sideline, I'm Jeezy, like, right? Damn, I want that to be my quarterback.
I'm high on the Raiders. I feel like they had a really good rookie class. We talked about it on the show today, but it's not just Josh Jacobs. You also add in Max Crosby, who had 10 sacks as a rookie. And like, they're really, really high on what they brought in this year. But two first round picks. I don't think this is the year for the Raiders, but they're going to be exciting in Vegas. I don't know if they're necessarily going to make a Super Bowl run, but I think they'll be much better than last year.
Are you going to be at every game in Vegas?
I'm going to try to be at every one. I want to be definitely the first preseason game and definitely first home.
We should go with CC, all of us.
I've never been to a Vegas pool party. So,
I want to go preseason
and then go to Vegas pool party like the whole weekend.
I'm down with that, bro. I'm not calling any preseason games this year. Let's do it. Shrager, know the owner. You know the owner?
I know the president of the Raiders. Oh, yeah, so we got dude. Mark Bedane.
There we go, right?
The platinum package.
That's good. And how about, do you expect either the Giants or the Jets to be playoff teams this year?
I believe the Giants have a better chance than the Jets.
Yeah. Jones?
Anchors with Saquon. But Jones, think about it. He's going to have Golden Tate healthy and ready to play first game of the year. He was missing four games. Sterling Shepard had the concussion. He was out for a while. Even Ingram was banged up. So the Giants are going to be good. They got to work on the defense. I feel like they're going to get a pass rusher. As far as the Jets, I love Adam Gase as a play caller. I think he's one of the beautiful minds this league has ever seen, the most beautiful mind this league has ever seen, or at least one of them. But my concern is his relationship with the players. Mm. And I hate to take it there, but when you look at the guys that he got rid of in Miami, and then even this year with the Jets, just whispers of guys not being comfortable. Jamal Adams is like the coolest dude in the world. He's like the ultimate leader. He's the young guy that gets it. Mm-hmm. And he was disgruntled. I just feel like sometimes his delivery, you know, he gets that bad rap of having a bad delivery with the media, and he looks aggravated. I feel like sometimes he has that type of relationship with his players, and I'm just speaking from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. And I have all the respect in the world for Matt Gase. Met him, and I immediately thought to myself, damn, I want to play for him. He's fiery. But then something happens every season where one player is just like, oh, I don't know.
I'm off this.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope that he can work on that part of it, because that's a big part of it, man. Like the social interaction. We just had Bashaud Breeland on the show, cornerback for the Chiefs. And Schrager asked him about his relationship with Andy Reid. And he went into this whole like, He's not a coach. He's a father figure to me. Mm. And let's just call it what it is. This is a hood dude from the South, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Got the twist in his hair. And he's just like, you know what? Andy Reid, this old traditional white
60-year-old guy who went to BYU. You know?
Yeah, like, right.
But the biggest thing he said was like, he let me be myself. Let us be ourselves. And like, that's all you asked for.
And I'm not saying
athlete.
Coaches need to be that to players, but how many players that have played for Gase have said anything remotely close to that?
Yeah.
I don't hear it. And, you know, to be honest, man, that stuff helps, man. That stuff helps when you see a coach and it's not just, hey, did you look at the XY corner route? It's sometimes you just want to walk in the locker room and the coach is like, hey, yo, Nate, how's your daughter doing, man? I'm like, man, she's cool, man. Everything good. Appreciate you asking, coach. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes that part of it is a big part of success.
Mm-hmm. I know. I am curious to see how that Gase relationship develops.
Yeah,
I
like Adam. I mean, yeah. I've gotten to know him on a personal level and a professional level, obviously, so maybe I'm biased. I think that stuff's blown out of proportion. I think a lot of that's the New York media making it bigger than it is. I think the Le'Veon Bell stuff this year, that was falsely blown out of proportion. I don't think he had anything issues with Le'Veon during the season.
Peter, but listen, Le'Veon Bell, issues blown out of proportion. Jamal Adams, issues
I know.
Blown out of proportion.
I know. Well, there's smoke, fire.
What you told me today. I know. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Your own words.
Hey, the truth of the matter is that, look, Damian Williams was with Adam Gase in Miami. Ryan Tannehill was with Adam Gase in Miami. Jarvis Landry was
Pro Bowler Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, so I get it. Yeah, I think the Jets are going to be better. It's really about, and it's not as sexy a name as maybe Le'Veon Bell or Sam Darnold, but it's really about Joe Douglas, the GM who they hired, who hasn't had an offseason yet.
Everyone
really respects him, and I think they're going to build, like, it's not going to be a flashy offseason for the Jets. Last year was the flashy offseason with Mosley and Bell. It's going to be offensive line and defensive line, and I think the Jets are going to be better. And then I think the Giants, I don't know Joe Judge that well, so we'll see. It's about a new coach, 38-year-old coach who doesn't have a long track record in the NFL. We'll see how that goes.
Guys, I like both quarterbacks.
You
though.
Do?
So do I.
Yeah. Jones looked good to me this year.
Like, it's good for New York, though, right? Like, we need something.
Yeah.
We ain't had a winner.
They've been irrelevant.
Long time,
both teams irrelevant for a while.
Hey, our Brooklyn Nets are coming, though, Peter.
That's my team.
Yeah, that's right. We're both rocking our Kyrie Sixes,
I'm in.
Too, I see.
I'm
you know?
In, bro.
Very
I'm
nice.
In.
Look at
okay,
us.
Hey, we're both rocking the J's.
Yeah, you know what? Peter and I will get there someday.
Ryan and I are more Joe Harris guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's my dude right there. Guys, thank you so much for taking all this time.
Of course.
See, I think you get to. Now not wake up at 4 a.m.
One more day.
One more day. All right. One more day at 4 a.m. wake up, bro. Yeah. And remember, review, rate, listen, subscribe. New episodes every Thursday. Thanks to Peter Schrager, Nate Burleson. Peace.